Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Support for the Adam Carolla Show comes from our friends at Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. With rising interest rates, there's a lot of unpredictability, a lot of anxiety out there. Our friends at Quicken Loans are doing something about that. The power buying process. They'll verify your income, assets, and credit in under 24 hours and give you a verified approval. Then you have the strength of cash buyer, which is important when you're out there in the real world. Once verified, you qualify for the all-new exclusive Rate Shield approval. They'll lock in your rate up to 90 days while you shop. If rates go up, your rate stays the same. But if rates go down, your rate drops. You can't lose, man. Either way, you're going to win. Get started today. Go to rocketmortgage.com/Adam. That's rocketmortgage.com/Adam. Dawson.
Rate Shield approval only valid on certain 30-year purchase transactions. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply based on Quicken Loans data in comparison to public data records. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. From Corolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, author Scott Adams. With Gina Grad on news and a new recipe in Eat Your Feelings, plus Bald Brian on sound effects. And now, he's not going to apologize to you or anyone else, Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get on Monday. Get it on. Thanks for tuning in and thanks for telling a friend. Yes, the people who won't apologize to you or anyone else are the same people that use the word home in front instead of house. In my home. And child instead of kids.
In front of my children.
My children. In my home. No, I won't apologize for the way I acted to you or anybody else. Good day, Gina Grand.
Good day to you.
And Bald Brian.
Okay, let me get my dick out.
All right.
Scott Adams in here. He's the creator of Dilbert.
Hello, hello.
Scott's got a book out called Win Bigly. It is persuasion in a world where facts don't matter. First edition is available now on Amazon. It's been out for about a year. You can bookmark us and click through. But there's a new paperback that's got a bunch of additional stuff in it, including Trump derangement syndrome, I believe we can talk about. And that's coming out October 30th. So go ahead and pre-order that as well. Good to speak to you again, my friend.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
He is featured in, I think, this coming week's Take a Knee episode podcast. You guys can download that and check it out, Podcast One,
this
and
Monday.
All that stuff. This Monday. So I have a little advantage because I was able to just interview Scott. But because I mainly just talk about myself, I really didn't learn anything. So,
well, wait a second. What kind of cars does Scott like?
Well, Scott told me his favorite cars of mine were the 88 Newman GT1 Championship car.
Says a lot about Scott.
Scott, now, I want to get this out up front. He considers himself or classifies himself as an ultra-liberal. I saw Scott on Bill Maher's show about 2 years ago or more when he said, I think Trump's going to win this one in May of 2016, I believe. Everyone sort of laughed him off the set, but he gave a very persuasive argument about persuasion. And I came in the next day, the next podcast, and started talking about it, and here he is.
Well, thanks for having me. I'm glad that made an impact. I persuaded you with my persuasion.
I'm one of these people, I think everyone is this way, but I'm really this way. If I hear the truth, I know it. And when I heard you talking about, well, people feel that way, but like when I see Virgin Guadalupe in a tortilla, I know it. You know what I mean? Like, okay, sweetie. But I mean, I watch Bill Maher's show and I watch it pretty religiously. I probably
religiously,
and I probably disagree with 77% of the stuff that goes by on that show. But when I hear somebody throw something out that makes sense, I respond to it.
Can I swear on this show? Is that allowed?
Yes, swear all you want.
So one of the things that you may have noticed is that almost everybody who goes on a show like that is a partisan. They got a side. But I've got fuck you money, and I don't owe anybody anything, and I don't even do this. I don't even talk about politics for money. You know, the books make money, but that was an afterthought.
Scott, can I jump in and say
sure.
this? You got better than fuck you money. You got fuck me money, which is I can do whatever the fuck I want, and even if it costs me, it doesn't matter. You can fuck yourself money. Fuck you money's I can screw other people, and I don't care. This you got fuck you money, brother. That's
well,
the most.
I'm working on it. What's the level after that?
That's it. You die.
You reach the singularity.
Yes.
That's what I'm going for.
Yeah, so you can say what you want because you don't. It doesn't matter to you. You know who you are, and you have enough money that you don't count on popular opinion.
Yeah, not for that part of my career. I still got this cartooning thing that's working out pretty well.
Well, brag about Dilbert for a second. How many papers, how many units of books have been sold, New York Times bestseller. Like, just brag about Dilbert for a hot minute.
Well, we're entering the 30th year of Dilbert, and it's one of the top comics that's ever been made. It's in 2,000 newspapers, 65 countries, bunch of languages, millions of books, millions of calendars, and that sort of thing.
So
so
there is no – there's a freedom to, I think, independence financially that many people who – go on TV shows and speak these days don't have, obviously, especially in this new world where everyone's showing up with a fucking torch and a pitchfork right. to pull you out of your house. Like, people have to mind their P's and Q's, and you got fuck me money.
Oh,
so good for you.
Footnote to that, Scott was asking about, well, what's after fuck me money? I feel like the only thing that's left is this sort of outer stratosphere where you have this nebulous relationship with money. You're like, what's money? Like, how much does that cost? I have no idea.
Why
like,
does
you
it
don't
matter?
Know the relative cost of things.
Yeah, but you could also say that for a large population of the homeless.
That's well, a real rich man,
yeah,
poor man.
That's the ultimate yeah. rich man, poor man.
Gallon of milk? I don't know.
No, I have no idea.
Either I send someone to buy it or I steal it. Yeah. I have no idea what it
costs.
They sell
in gallons?
I feel like the level after this is so much money that you have to run for president. Like,
yes.
You
yeah.
don't even have a choice.
Where do you go from here?
So, like, I got nothing else to do.
So you're ultra-liberal. You're not Republican, you haven't voted in a while, but you're a fan of Trump or you're a fan of what he's doing?
I'm good at compartmentalizing. So I'm mm-hmm. a huge fan of his talent. I like him personally. I got to meet him in the Oval Office a few weeks ago, which was amazing. And his persuasion talent, and I think he's, you know, he has the best interests in the country in mind. I know some people don't believe that, but I don't believe anybody becomes president and then they say, well, what's in it for me? Like in our system, I think by the time you get there, the system kind of controls you and you're actually trying to do what's good for the country. So I think, you know, I appreciate him on that level as well.
Well, does he – I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I just
that's mind-boggling to me on both sides. Like, I feel like the reason people get into politics is to further their own interests for the most part. Not 100%, but 75%?
I think they might get into it for those
but
reasons.
But once you reach that level, you're saying.
Right. Once you become president, the country and you are almost the same thing. And if you did anything that was not good for the country, it's just not going to be good for you. And you can't hope nobody notices, right? There's just so much transparency in the presidency. I suppose we wish there were even more, but it's remarkably transparent. You become the brand and you better freaking get it right or it's not good for you. There's no such thing as being a bad president and coming out okay.
Do you think he thinks of the country as a business and he is going to be the CEO and he's going to get the stock price up as high as he can, and then that will label him a successful CEO? Because it feels to me like he approaches everything like it's a business, and then when all the tweets and the horse face and the Stormy Daniels and all the other stuff, he just looks at that as, well, that's got to do with business.
Well, I think he's done something that nobody's done, which is he's brought different fields together in what I call a talent stack. You know, some people are just politicians, but he brings theater. He brings, you know, his persuasion ability. He brings, you know, business experience, the kind we haven't quite seen in that job before. And he uses all of those tools. And we've never seen anybody use all of those tools. I mean, just his branding ability, branding his enemies, you know, branding his own movement. I mean, from day one, his slogan, Make America Great Again, was just solid gold branding. and then compare it to what Hillary Clinton, the most experienced, most money and every other advantage. And she came up with what, Stronger Together? And that was after, I believe the New York Times reported there were 85 different slogans they worked through. And they just still came up with a dud.
One more generic than the last.
Yeah.
Well, let's listen. And I want to say we'll listen to the clip from Bill Maher. And that was May of 2016. I do believe Max Pata, thumbs up.
And we talked about it so much and we talked about Scott so much. I'm like, you've been here tons of times.
in our minds, yeah. I want to thank Quicken Loans. Go to rocketmortgage.com/Adam for this half of the show. LifeLock, you can go to lifelock.com, enter Adam. And Castrol Challenge, you tweet us your questions at Adam Carolla Show with hashtag Castrol Challenge. So, May 2016, and this is you sliding in on Maher's show and talking about Trump. Here we go. So, again, just to put a fine point on it, months before he was elected president. Here we go.
And I've been studying persuasion for decades, and when I saw Trump last summer displaying the tools of persuasion, I thought, oh, my God, he's not a crazy clown. Everything he's doing, including his complete ignoring of the facts, is persuasion perfection. And I called him to be the landslide winner in the general election last year because the tools he's using, essentially he's basically taking a flamethrower to a stick fight. There's nobody using the same tools he's using. So his complete ignoring of facts are actually part of the persuasion because he doesn't give you targets. He doesn't give you details of his policies usually. So he's reducing the number of targets while making you feel good and focus on the things he wants. So it's not about facts. It's about focus and attention.
And there it was. And do you believe he's still doing that? And are we now entering a new era where everyone's going to have to do that? Or what's your take on the present and the future?
Well, I feel like people are onto him a little bit because when he started doing his tweets about, Stormy Daniels being horse face, everybody said, hey, wait a minute. He's just distracting from, this other bad news from Saudi Arabia. So I think people are onto it now that persuasion is about moving attention. And I'll give you the best example of that. And the moment I realized he was going to win, which was the first debate when there was the accusation that he had said bad things about women, and he was totally trapped on the very first question of the first debate. There's no way you get out of this. He's being branded as this sexist, horrible pig, and he just injects while they're still talking.
Megyn Kelly?
Yeah, Megyn Kelly. While she's still talking, he just says, only Rosie O'Donnell. And the whole place erupts. And from that moment on, the question became immediately irrelevant. The answer was everything. He moved the attention from the question, which was devastating and should have ended his whole campaign, to the answer, which was so provocative and so interesting and so wrong but right at the same time that I said, oh, my God, I've never seen anybody escape a trap that was that strong. And then he went on to escape one trap after another, and you could see it wasn't a coincidence.
So as an ultra—well, how does one classify themselves as an ultra-liberal?
Well, let me give you some examples. Number one would be let's take abortion. If you're conservative, you say let's not do that abortion. If you're liberal, you say let's do it under certain circumstances. And I go left of that and I say maybe men should just stay out of that, except for where our money is involved. Everybody gets to vote about their money. But if women as a group, let's say as a consensus, want a rule change on abortion, either pro or anti, I'm going to support that if the majority of women support it. So I say that men should voluntarily – you can all make your own choices, right? And I'm not telling any other man what to do. I'm just saying that for me, I take myself out of that. I recuse myself because I don't have babies. I don't suffer the discrimination of being a childbearing kind of woman in the workplace. And it's a good rule to say that whoever takes the biggest responsibility gets a little extra say. And there's no doubt that women take, of course, the vast majority of the responsibility of having a child. I say they get more say. That's left of Bernie.
Give us another left of Bernie.
Another example would be reparations. for slavery. Now, the normal way we look at that is, hey, let's people who had nothing to do with slavery, you know, reach in your pockets and pay people because of their grievance. And that's been done before, you know, with the Japanese internment camps, et cetera. So it's not crazy. But I would say that we should treat it as an investment. And if you were to – and this is just an example, right? If you were to say we'll tax just the top 1% and just and that money will go to create a fund, let's say for 25 years that if you're an African-American, you get a free college education or trade school. And you just say it's 25 years. It's only going to affect the top 1%. And what that does is, first of all, 99% of the world doesn't care because they're not paying it. And the top 1% are unique because for them it's an investment. Because if the top 1% can move the needle on the people who are in the deepest hole, it just makes the economy better. It's less that they have to pay for services. And in the long run, it should just come back to them. So that's unique about the top 1%.
It sounds like an easy sell. That's the top 1%. Very easy sell.
I feel I'm with you. There's one caveat, which is I don't agree with just sort of free college or free something. I want to match, like, you know, I wouldn't buy my son or my daughter. I wouldn't want to give them a free car. I would say, you know, if you can save up $4,000, then I'll put in $4,000. Like some, and I'm sure you oversimplified it a little bit, but right. I want some skin in the game. My feeling is I like this notion, but I like the idea of you being invested in it as well.
Right. Yeah. That would be a good element to add on to that. Yeah. As you said, it's not a complete idea. It's just an example.
Well, if it's Scott and Adam in 2020.
Yes, sir.
You'll barely have to change your name.
Yeah. Adam and Adams.
But that being said, can we think of another individual who's in the public eye who says I'm ultra liberal and these are my feelings about reparations and abortion and I support President Trump or I like what he's doing in the arena of Korea or finance or the economy. Is there anybody else like you that you're aware of beside Kanye? I don't even know what Kanye is.
Yeah, well, how about Kanye? I mean, there's a good example. I would imagine that he would skew far liberal in his preferences, and he's still okay with President Trump as a person and as a president.
So why are you okay with President Trump, given that you're an extreme liberal?
Well, look at the various issues. He's making good progress in North Korea. That's looking good. The economy is doing great. That looks good. He just passed Congress passed and he signed a bill about opioids. That's huge. You know, the judges, you know, if you had asked me 20 years ago, would I be happy with conservative judges? I would have said that's going to be a problem because there might be things that I care about that they're going to vote out. But if you put a bunch of conservative judges in who don't like to overthrow precedent, and we've basically locked in, I don't know, 99% of the stuff anybody cares about, you know, what's left? You got gay marriage, you know, you pretty much have locked in all the good stuff that lefties like, and the conservatives are the ones who don't want to change precedent. So it may not be that dangerous. It may not be ideal, but it may not be dangerous if you're on the left.
Speaking of gay marriage, are you single? Because I've never been more attracted to a man, his ideas, his bank account.
Scott, just answer the question.
I'm willing to try it for an hour, you know.
I can't draw for shit, but I think I could kick out some good Dilbert ideas, you know what I mean?
You got some workshops and stuff.
Could you do that for like a week? I need a week off.
Well, it's a lot about the workplace, all about the workplace, right? And I do, you know, I'd just be laying in bed, eating strawberries, going, hey, Dennis Hoff just died. Let's say Dilbert takes over the Bunny Ranch. You know, that's a work. That's a work environment, but we mix it up a little for 2018. It's just spitballing.
That could go on for a while.
It's that easy.
It's that easy.
a lot of people think it's hard work. It isn't.
Oh, no. I mean, not for talent. Sure. Honey, could you give me more strawberries? I'm really racking my brain for these Dilbert ideas. So, and your schedule is, I found this sort of interesting. I mean, it's you. It's still you. You do the drawings. You do the jokes.
Right.
You farm out a little of the fine tuning, but not in the comedy department. What is the Dilbert schedule for you?
So it's first thing I do in the morning. You know, I get up around 5 or 6, depending. And the only thing I do in the morning that's not Dilbert is usually my Periscope that I do for about an hour. But otherwise, I'm drawing and writing, and I batch them up, and then I send them off to my assistant who does the final art, you know, making them look perfect. I rough them out. For most of my career, I did all of the drawing to the final, but after a few decades of that, your hand just can't do it anymore.
You can watch the Periscope, by the way, at Scott Adams Says on Twitter. I want you to share your story of how Dilbert was created, or really how you were created, for any of you are out there who are thinking about doing something but wondering whether to do it or not. We kind of got into it and Take a Knee, but I thought it'd be good to share with this audience. I'm going to tease that and tell you first about LifeLock. Strong cybersecurity has layers of protection spread across computers, networks, programs. They rely on technology. They want to steal your online presence. Also, you got to make smart choices. Keep your software updated. Stay informed on cyber safety. Consumers also need cybersecurity to help protect their digital lives. In today's connected world, it just takes one weak link for criminals to get in, steal your identity. And good luck on ringing that bell. New LifeLock Identity Theft Protection adds the power of Norton Security to help protect against threats to your identity and devices you can't easily see or fix on your own. It's 2018. We need protection, and we need digital protection. God, just turn on the news. It's all over the place. It is LifeLock, right, Dawson?
No one can stop every cyber threat, prevent all identity theft, or monitor transactions at all businesses. The new LifeLock with Norton Security can see threats you might miss on your own. Go to LifeLock.com or call 1-800-LifeLock and use promo code Adam for an additional 10% off your first year, plus a $25 Amazon gift card with annual enrollment. That's promo code Adam. Terms apply.
All right, Scott, why don't we talk about how you went from employee to one of the biggest cartoonists on the planet.
So I was working at a big bank in San Francisco, Crocker National Bank.
Oh, Crocker. Were they bought by somebody?
Wells Fargo.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. Because I remember that as a kid. Somebody. I remember Crocker.
Crocker Bank. And that was my first job out of college. And I was sort of on the management track, and it looked like things were good for me. And one day my boss called me in. And she said that the local newspaper had discovered that we had no diversity in senior management. And she just wanted to tell me that I would never get promoted because I'm white and male. And
white privilege kicking in again into high gear.
That's right.
And until they,
I hope you learned your lesson.
Yeah. And until that situation was remedied, which could take years, you know, how long did it take to get to this place? It was going to take a long time to fix it. So they were honest with me, and I appreciated that, but I immediately started looking for another job, as anybody would. Went to the phone company, Pacific Bell, got on the management fast track there. Things were looking good. A few years in, my boss called me in and said, you know, I don't know how to tell you this, but the media has discovered that we don't have any diversity in senior management. And until further notice, we can't promote you because you're white and male.
The papers are following you around in different jobs.
And it's like, there he goes again. Let's get him.
Get him.
So, you know, it took me – I couldn't talk about that. I didn't talk about that maybe for 10 or 15 years because the environment was such that you just couldn't honestly just describe the situation.
There would be no sympathy for you.
You know, 10 years ago, if I tried this, it would be like, oh, you know, you racist or something. Yeah. I'm like, no, I'm literally just describing it.
As an ultra liberal, did you respect the hell out of that decision? Do you say, you know what, that's okay with me?
You know, I have to say I was not as put off by it as you might imagine.
Probably.
Because how the hell else do you fix it, right?
Sure.
Like, you know, it sucks that I'm the one. Mm. Like, I wish that the burden had been on someone else. But, you know, I don't hate the fact that there was an impulse toward making things more fair. But for me, I had to find something else to do that had no cap on it. You know, I'd hit the ceiling, apparently. And so that's when I decided to try cartooning. It was a lifelong dream, you know, since I was a little kid. But I'd let that dream lapse because, you know, who becomes a famous cartoonist, right? I wanted to become Charles Schulz when I was a kid. And I thought, well, you know, by the time I was 11, I thought, wait a minute. I just realized there's only one of them.
Right.
And there are like 6 billion people at the time, whatever it was. I don't like my odds. I'll do something standard. So I decided to take that dream out of the closet and try to become a cartoonist, but I didn't know how.
What year was this approximately?
This is like 1988.
Okay.
And consider that this is pre-internet. So how do you figure out how to do something? It's actually really hard. There's no book for it or whatever. And as luck would have it, just as I was wondering how to do it, I turned on television and there was a television show about how to become a cartoonist. Of all things. I'd never seen it before. I've never seen it since. And I only caught the last few minutes of it. But it was just enough to figure out where it was broadcast from the closing credits. So I wrote a letter to the host of the show, and I said, I missed your show, but can you tell me how to become a cartoonist?
I don't want to up the stakes, but they were this close to airing a special called How to Break into Gay Porn. And at the last moment,
the lucrative world.
Somebody called an audible and said, let's do the cartoonist thing.
Right.
So this could have had a very different outcome,
yeah,
Scott.
That's just saying.
You could be talking to a very different Scott Adams right now.
That's right. Continue.
As I was saying.
People say continue. Continue.
As I was saying, so I got a 2-page letter back from the host of the show. His name is Jack Cassidy, professional cartoonist. And he answered all my questions and, you know, he said, buy this book. It'll tell you where to send your samples and use this kind of paper. And then he gave me this advice. He said, it's a very competitive industry. Don't give up. And I thought, oh, great. I know everything I need to know now. So I put together some cartoons. I sent them off to the big magazines, Playboy and New Yorker, because they just paid the most for cartoons. The rejections came in.
No Dilbert at this point, just general cartoons.
Right. They were just general single-panel cartoons. And they came back with just rejection notes. And they weren't even original rejection notes. I swear to God.
Boilerplate.
It was like a 15th generation photocopy of somebody else's rejection with no name on it. You know, it was just.
Memorex.
Yeah, this is not for us. Sorry.
Dear Mr. Larson crossed out.
And so I said to myself, well, I tried, right? You know, I gave it my best effort. Didn't work out. Put all my stuff in a closet. A year later, I go to my mailbox and there's another letter from the same cartoonist, Jack Cassidy, who gave me the advice a year before. And he said that he was cleaning his office and he came upon a pile that had my original letter and some samples I'd sent him. And he said he was just writing to make sure that I hadn't given up.
Wow, what a guy.
And that was the only thing he wrote for.
Yeah, talk about timing.
Just to make sure I hadn't given up.
Wow.
A year
followed
later.
Up. I wonder, in terms of batting average and having letters returned, if cartoonist isn't very high on the list, meaning these are people who sit down with pen and pad every day. They're little, like if you wanted to break into rapping and you wrote like, Dear Mr. Two Chainz, I don't know that you'd get a letter back.
Dear Mr. Chainz.
Yeah, I don't know if you get like as quickly and certainly not the 1-year follow-up.
Yes.
I feel like these are guys that
they're already
sitting
there
at a desk.
They're at
you
a
know.
Traffic table.
Yeah, they're there. You know what I mean? Like it's a higher batting average.
Dear, Mr. B.I.G., can I call you Notorious?
I just like the jobs that have the highest percentage of writing back versus or professions versus no
right.
can do. But
yeah.
Anyway, sorry, go ahead.
So with that encouragement, I decided to raise my sights. To try to become a syndicated cartoonist, meaning being in newspapers all over the world, which, as you can imagine, is just the hardest thing in the world. You know, thousands of people every year try to do it. They'll pick a handful. Of the handful they pick, 4 out of 5 will be gone in a year and a half. Right, so it's like a deadly competitive business. So I sent off my samples to, I think there were about 4 syndication companies. I thought I'd heard from them all, and they said no. And one day I got a call from a woman who said that she was with a company that I didn't recognize, somebody called United Media. And she said, we like your work. We'd like to offer you a contract to be a syndicated cartoonist. And I thought to myself, I've never heard of this company. And I hadn't sent my samples to anybody by that name. So I said, well, you know, I'm flattered by your offer. But I'd feel a little more comfortable if you had some references. And, you know, I said, is there any cartoonist you've ever worked for that's been published? And she said, yeah, we handle Peanuts.
Ever and, heard of it?
And Garfield. And when she got to about the 10th name on the list,
the 10th luminary.
I realized that this was the place for me. And so I signed up, got a lawyer, got a contract, and they essentially coached me into how to do the job.
Are you still with them? Has it been a good relationship?
They got bought by another company, but yes, essentially.
Crocker Bank bought them in 07.
A real circle of life situation.
And then they hired a black cartoonist.
So Scotty topped out.
And by the way, the entire group I worked with at the bank all got fired like a few months after I left. They were all just wiped out by the takeover of Wells Fargo.
No, that's what happened to Crocker. I love that. It's such a – I was thinking about asking this question. I'll ask it anyway. You know, making a ton of money is awesome, but making a ton of money because you've taken over your dad's furniture business is less awesome than doing something that's insanely low percentage and making a ton of money. Do you share that thought?
Yeah. So it feels good, but you have to also put it in context. It wasn't the one high risk, high payoff thing I tried. I had a strategy coming out of college that I was going to try a series of things like that. That if they didn't work, it wouldn't kill me. But if it did work, there was no upside limit. It could be as good as anything. So I've probably tried 30 different businesses, and a few of them have worked really well, but most of them don't. But it's sort of a numbers game.
Thank God he didn't get to number two on the list. Abduct Patty Hearst.
No upside. No limit to the upside.
Although persuasion was involved there too.
True.
Yeah, so – persuasion. Let's drill down on that, or let's jump around here. I want to talk about that, but I'd like to talk about Trump derangement syndrome, which is in the paperback. The let's see, is my mic okay? Yep. So one of the new chapters in the paperback. Tell us what your definition of that is.
Well, the Trump derangement syndrome. I think people see it, and I describe it as sort of the two movies that are running on one screen. It's like we're all looking at the same stuff, but we're having completely different interpretations of it. And so for a big part of the world, there was a sort of a bomb that got created that didn't get to be diffused. And it happened over the summer before the election. And I believe, and it's been confirmed through third parties, that Robert Cialdini, one of the greatest experts on influence and persuasion, probably was consulting for the Clinton campaign, but toward the end. She had a very bad persuasion game until the summer before the election.
Cialdini sounds like the world's laziest magician.
I
could pull a rabbit out of my hat, but Jesus Christ.
Maybe I'll just tell them that I did and they'll believe it.
I'm just going to listen to Jimmy Buffett and have a cold one.
If I can rescue
the magic lady.
Rescue later. Myself from this Barca lounger.
Pick a card. Please make it the top one.
Come on, Cialdini. You gotta get the old deck out. You can't just hand me one card.
Is this your card? No? Well.
I'm going to pull half a handkerchief out of my sleeve. You get it, right? I don't have to keep going with the never-ending rope. Yes, Cialdini. Yes.
I'm not going to saw my assistant all the way in half. You get the idea.
That's not a card. That's a coaster.
Yeah. It'll do. You get it. Sorry, Cialdini.
But you might remember that that all of the anti-Trumpers, the pro-Clinton people, started using the word dark all at the same time. Mm-hmm. As soon as he was done with the Republican convention, everybody was saying, it's a dark speech, it's a dark thing. And people were really afraid that an actual Hitler-like character was about to come to power. Like, it wasn't just hyperbole. People came to believe that in a real way – the country was in serious danger and their lives were in danger. And if you were a woman or you're a minority, you're gay, you had been convinced that it was extra dangerous. Now, that all would have been diffused had Hillary Clinton won. And everybody just would have said, we don't even remember who she was running against. Hey, Hillary. But because she didn't, it was such a shock that people got locked into their illusion. They got trapped in a movie and they couldn't get out. And they started seeing, danger where it wasn't. And at the same time that Trump was moving toward moderating, so, he said a lot of crazy stuff during the campaign. But when he got elected, he's like, well, okay, we're not going to deport 14 million people. Just kidding, about that part. So he was moving way toward the middle in lots of different ways. But people were locked into the movie and they couldn't get out. And so they were just interpreting anything he did as, you know, almost the end of the world any moment.
Well, obviously, you can do it on your own and individually or in your sewing group. But it's hard to keep going if the news isn't helping the narrative, right?
Right. You would think that a whole bunch of news that was disconfirming of their idea would talk them out of it. But people are so sticky when they get an idea. You know, there's a thing called confirmation bias, right? So they'll simply interpret the environment as being what they meant all along. Mm-hmm. So if you take a look at North Korea, it's just the cleanest example. I believe an objective person, let's say if an alien came down from another planet and said, hey, look at the situation. Do you think
we got to build that dome.
Yeah.
I mean, we can't have these aliens sneaking into our stratosphere. But go ahead.
Build the dome.
Build the dome.
That's right. It's a bad hombres.
That's right. Sorry. Alien comes down. They take a look at Korea.
And they would say, hey, it looks like everything's going in the right direction, right? But the Trump supporters will look at exactly the same information and say, he's playing you. He's playing you. He's still building nukes. It's all a trick. Nothing has changed.
The Trump supporters or
The anti-Trumpers would say that everything's going wrong.
Right.
So you would think that the facts could talk people out of it, but they just see the facts that they see. They don't see an objective reality. I'm not even sure there is one.
Well, you know, we've jumped the shark a little in that department, which is – this just jumped to mind. But there's a – like it'll – to speak to what you just said, they'll have an opening of the African-American Museum or something. And if Trump shows up, it'll be like, oh, I can't believe he had the nerve to show his face at this place. But if he doesn't show up, then it's a slight.
Yeah.
It's a huge slight. So that's a difficult one to compromise on. And that's kind of – if you just think about the sort of the African-American Museum, that's kind of where we're at. If you show up, it's not going to work. If you don't show up, it's really not going to work. I'm not sure how it's going to work. If those are – it's really an A or B, and either way, depending on whether you're watching CNN or Fox, that's where we're at. Yeah. It's going to be tough to reconcile that.
Yeah. We didn't get to this place by accident. You know, if you go back a few decades, the news was sort of this objective thing where they would try to describe what's actually happening. But the business model has changed, and the only way they can make news is by getting you really mad or angry or worked up. And so the click economy requires people to get angry and upset in order for the news industry to make money, so they make sure that they stay that way.
What are your predictions, since you had such great insights on the last election? What do you think? We got one coming up in about 3 weeks, the midterms. Then we have presidential election. And what's your thoughts on that?
Well, the midterms are tough to call because that really gets into the individual matchups and, you know, the gerrymandering and lots of things that are hard to see from, you know, 30,000 feet. You know, presidential election is a little easier because one-on-one. But I would say the Republicans are going to do way better than people thought a year ago. I don't know if they'll do better enough to, you know, pull out a surprise victory. But I will tell you that Republicans are not easy to predict, which and I love this about them. Because if a pollster calls and says, who are you going to vote for? They may not just answer the question. Or they may say what their wife wants to hear if she's in the room. I think you're going to see maybe a record show up for Republicans, you know, a turnout. But I don't know if that'll be enough because the Democrats are, you know, they're signing people up like crazy to register to vote.
Well, but I would just think that after Trump wins the presidency and Kavanaugh gets, you know, put in, you know, SCOTUS, you'd think that the Democrats are more energized than ever to just crush because they feel like they have nothing going for them right now.
Yeah, certainly the energy is super high on both sides, but it's easier to, I think, see the Democrats' energy and what that might translate to. I think the Republicans are sort of rope-a-dope sleepers. Mm. Like, they're more about action. You know, I'm not going to protest, but I'm going to get up at 7. I'm going to vote. You know, that's sort of the Republican thing is, you know, tell me what I need to do. Now I'm going to go take care of business.
What about
their signs are way more boring.
What about the presidency?
I think, you know, there could be a million surprises between now and the next election, but everything is pointing toward an easy win for Trump to get reelected.
What are the chances that Trump gets the second term? I believe those are hugely. But what are the chances he does the second term and makes a real effort for a third term? I mean,
he's put it out there. Even
is that out of the question? I mean, if he's controlling like the House and Congress and things, you know, the economy singing along, like, what are the chances that he makes it? And I know he'll be 81 years old or whatever it is, but.
You mean to rewrite the Constitution just become a dictator?
I don't know. Just like really make a push for a third term.
Well, let me put it in context. When Obama was elected, a friend of mine, a Republican, bet me that Obama would not leave office and he would become a dictator. And I actually won a considerable amount of money betting against Obama becoming a dictator, which sounds funny, right?
Like, did it give me odds or was it a straight-up bet?
Just straight-up bet.
Who is this idiot?
With no odds.
Hold on.
What else can I bet him?
I want to bet him. Yeah.
That guy's got F me money.
I was going to say.
Because if you want it considerable, can you say, give us a ballpark of the money.
Oh, just considerable. I think it was $500 or something. I mean, it was.
That's not F.
Pocket
no, but I mean, that guy's
that's
got
what F. What he had in his pocket.
Right. I'm saying, that guy's got, he treats $500 like Dawson treats a cigarette butt. Like, who cares? Right. That's F me money. This guy must have F me money.
He's pretty rich.
So. It's Bill Watterson.
So people think this about the presidents, but I think the system is just so strong. And I don't think.
Oh, I don't say it's going to work. I just mean if he has control of the House and the Senate and he's, you know, things are singing along, you know, with Korea and the economy, is he going to make a push?
No.
No.
I'm going to put that at zero.
You want to bet $500? All right. Let me tell you guys about Castrol. Castrol Edge. You can tweet us at Adam Carolla Show with hashtag Castrol Challenge for your question for Castrol Challenge. Brought to you by Castrol Edge. Formulated with fluid titanium technology. Reduces friction and maximizes engine performance. Three times.
Three times, fool.
Stronger against viscosity breakdown and leading full synthetic oil. What do you got, Max Pat? I got a question.
Sure do. This one comes from Instagram. At the 91 Warrior wants to know, hashtag Castrol Challenge. Ace Man, have you thought about setting up a Corolla race team with your own car that history will be about your races?
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of dictatorship.
Speaking of F me money.
Yeah.
Racing is super expensive. Really, like a lot more expensive than anyone really knows. I don't know what it costs. You know, this is an F1, but to put on an F1 team, it's millions and millions and millions of dollars. It's just like semi-trucks, and that's why everyone gets sponsors and all that. And it doesn't really pay. So, it's a bad, but, you know, someone like Scott wanted to put Dilbert on the side of a C7R Corvette that could definitely make a difference. It is, it's been discussed a little bit, but it is just such a crazy financial undertaking with not a whole lot of upside that it's nearly impossible. But I have talked to a few people about doing a few more professional races and driving someone else's car and maybe even doing a season. But then a season, in order to go for the points, means you got to do all these events all over the country. Otherwise, you'll get out of the points. And there's just so many days in the year. But thank you. And thanks for your Castrol Edge and Castrol Challenge. Scott, what do you drive? Something smart, something electric?
It's a BMW X5 2011.
Yeah, that's smart.
Practical.
But not electric.
Practical car.
Are you still in the Bay Area?
I am, yes.
And do we get to the part about you being married or kids or any of that stuff?
I am not married. I have a beautiful girlfriend, Christina Basham. And she would love to hear her voice on the show.
I'm just doing the math. You live in the Bay Area, so I grew up there, and you've lived there since at least the 80s, you know, based on your work history. You've seen it change a lot. I mean, I don't know what part you live in, but it's changed a ton, I imagine, wherever you are.
Yeah, I started out in San Francisco, and now I'm in the East Bay, and I hear it's not such a fun place to walk around in the city anymore.
There's a slight human fecal matter problem.
You gotta watch where you're stepping.
Yeah. Just a small fecal problem, yes. Yeah.
You know, it's funny. They have these shoes that are sort of like what the geishas would wear, the wood with the blocks, yeah. Risers on them. But there's a version of that, Max Pat. You can look around. I'm not sure what they're called. But the guys who do like finish work in masonry, and they do like slabs and have to walk around on the wet cement. Obviously, you don't want to put a big boot in there. So you want to make your footprint literally. As small as possible. Hmm. And I think you just kind of strap them on like snowshoes or something. Right. We should just issue those in San Francisco. Oh, the companies that do the scooters.
Yeah. Bird.
They should just rent out these shoes. It's called Turd, and you could walk through San Francisco with them and then just kind of kick them off when you got to the club or the pub or whatever, and then you just go use your app and find another set of these shoes.
Hashtag poo shoes.
Yeah. Poo shoes.
Shit shoes.
That's right.
I think there is an app where somebody actually finds the places that have all the human feces. And
that is true. Crap app.
Yeah.
Crap snap. Snap crap.
But you gotta wonder, is that guy really lazy and just shitting on the sidewalk and then putting it into the app?
Oh, Cialdini.
It's a way to run off his crafts.
Cialdini, the world's laziest magician.
Strikes again.
Hocus, you know the rest.
Hocus.
Yeah. Oh, I just the funniest sketch ever. We got a tank. It's supposed to have water in it, but we kind of whiffed on that. But I'm still going to submerge myself in it. So you got to kind of picture me struggling for air. Okay. I got a fireman. He's got an axe.
Struggling.
And, yeah.
Thrashing about. You're getting worried.
Yeah, I was gonna take handcuffs and handcuff myself, but we just got these zip ties. But they should do. Yeah, Cialdini, the world's laziest magician. All right, let's see, Max Pat, do you find out what are those shoes called?
Are they these? They're finishing flats. You put your shoes in them, and they're kind of like these big slippers.
That could definitely not be them.
Somehow uglier Crocs.
Shoe. In pro finish concrete?
They look like the...
No, they're in... No, hold on. Max Pata.
Mm-hmm.
People hate it when I yell at you, but can we put... would you just put back on there?
Even seeing my tweets.
Put it back on there. What's it say?
That says shoe in pro finishing flats. We Googled masonry finishing shoes.
It's concrete texture. I think that's the color of it, right?
Yeah, but you know, but you put your shoes in those. Like you're wearing boots and you put your feet in those, and then that's how you finish. That's how you do the finishing.
That's the finish.
Yeah,
or so that's the color of the shoe. Am I making this up, or does this seem
weird?
No,
it's concretetexturing.com.
The shoe in pro seems like what it's called. It's called the shoe in pro.
Oh, yeah, but Max Pat, this is going to have the cleats on it.
Okay.
That raise you up above the poo. This is probably something for you not to walk around with your boots in on the slab. I'm talking about this stuff that raise you up in the wet concrete. Sorry. All right. Where were we? Cialdini?
Yep. Cialdini.
More Cialdini.
I want the electric scooter that's got like a little snow plow on the front.
Oh, for the poo. Good.
You go right through it.
I love it.
Good.
Oh. So none of that where you're at over in the East Bay, did you say?
Yeah, we're all poo free. Yeah.
Nice.
Just as long as we're on the local topic, were you up there for the earthquake or the anniversary of the 89 earthquake?
I was, yes.
Yeah, right before the World Series.
I lost my TV. It was a tragic day.
You poor thing.
Oh, man.
Yeah. It was brand new.
Yeah, there's the shoes we're talking about, the ones you strap on that have the little cleats at the bottom of them so you rise up above.
They look like the shoes you wear to aerate your lawn.
Right.
Yeah, or climb. We use ice climbing shoes when you climb frozen waterfalls.
Yeah.
Either way, let's get the app going out there. Scott, thanks for coming out. Win bigly, persuasion in a world where facts don't matter. It's available for on Amazon. The first edition is as we speak, and the updated paperback version is going to be out on Amazon next Tuesday, October 30th. Give me my plugs, Max Zapata, would you please? So Scott, what do you do? Hop on NetJets or something, head back to the Bay Area?
I've got a little more work down here, and then I'll be flying on Southwest.
Wow, that's how you stay rich.
Yeah.
Do you your temperament and your vibe seems so good? Do you meditate? Are you vegan? Do you have a process? Is there something physical going on that you may share with us that my audience may enjoy or get something out of?
Well, I would say I spend a tremendous amount of energy trying to de-stress myself.
And so other than masturbation, how does this – yeah.
Wait,
what do you do? You take walks?
Oh, I didn't realize there was other things.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so just
I thought we were done on that. But
well, refractory period, you may want to throw a tennis ball to a dog or something. I mean, penis still out, obviously. Yeah. At a park, obviously. Kids nearby, obviously.
Swing set.
Obviously.
So just diet and fitness and tons of marijuana. Those are my secrets.
Really?
Trifecta.
What's the marijuana regimen?
Well, I'm a medical user.
Mm-hmm.
And it helps me in a variety of ways, from sleep apnea to you name it. But, takes care of my asthma, my allergies, my tension, my high blood pressure, it's a full anti-inflammatory.
Yeah, I get it. Typical Trump supporter. It's his weed.
Put down the weed, son.
What's your vehicle of choice? Edibles or vape or smoke?
Edibles are crazy. Anybody who does edibles hasn't really done the research.
Because
you don't know what you're getting. Everybody who has a problem on marijuana, it's always an edible.
They think mm-hmm. they're dying. And
yeah. Mm-hmm. But I prefer smoking. Mm. Old school.
Yeah, I like that. I like it.
Very happy.
Yeah, I bet Scott remembers the stone, which is what you'd put the roach of the joint into. Like a lot of people use the roach clip.
Right.
A lot of people just use the, okay sign pinch.
Yep.
But back in the day, they had something called a stone. And it was like somebody took a ceramic bead and mashed it down and then, drew a zigzag on there. Or one of Led Zeppelin signs on there or something like that. And you'd smoke it out of a stone.
Yes.
It's kind of wildly effective. I don't know why they never really were in vogue.
I had one of those. It was pretty awesome, I got to say.
Yeah, you should revisit that. Take some of that $500 you went off your dumb rich friend and go online and buy yourself a stone. What do they call them now, Maxipatas? Do they call those things stones?
Yeah, roach clip, roach holder.
But not roach clip.
It's not like the little pincher.
A roach clip is a roach clip. This is a stone.
This is called a roach holder.
I've never seen that before, which is shocking to me.
Show a better one. Like it's like a little flattened out bead. Well, it could come
it's
in
like,
different shapes.
Like a cigarette extender, but for roaches.
Right. All right. There you go. There's a stone.
That's what that is.
Get one of those. Put Dilbert on it. Live a little bit.
Merch.
Merch. All right. We'll take a... I'm going to be at Phoenix Stand Up Live October 27th doing basic cable commentary. Adam Ray is going to be up on stage. Two shows. And Mike Augustus will be up there with us as well. And then we'll be at the Grove, Anaheim, Rob Riggle. That'll be November 30th. So come out. That'll be a live podcast. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll do Good Sports and we'll do Eat Your Feelings. Gina's got a dish worked up for us. Right after this.
Hey, this is Stephanie Wilder Taylor.
And Lynette Carolla.
And we're For Crying Out Loud. Listen to our show because there's lots of swearing.
Mm-hmm. Lots of stories.
Lots of personal information.
That you don't really need to know, but we tell you anyway.
Yeah.
So check us out on iTunes and Podcast One.
For Crying Out Loud with Lynette Carolla and Stephanie Wilder Taylor. Every Tuesday and Friday at Carolla Digital. Podcast One and Apple Podcasts.
The Podcast One Sports Network presents Good Sports.
Hi and hello, sports fans. Welcome to the Friday episode of Good Sports here on Podcast One Sports. Dave Damashek here. Adam Carolla over there. Reminder, Dave's of Thunder. New episode up there for you. Track it down wherever you find your favorite podcasts. Ace, it's a football weekend. It's exciting. It's always exciting. You know what the best part is, Ace? I think we need to pump the brakes or just try to, you know, Oprah and et cetera. They often will tell you, live in the now. Don't live in the rearview mirror. Don't look too far ahead. You're right here, right now. You know what? We only are, we really have more than half a football season left. So often we're left with, wait, that's all? It's almost done already. No, let's take a moment and appreciate that.
Yeah. And then, of course, playoffs and Super Bowl and the Super Bowl party. And I hope Kimmel brings his wings.
Oh, yeah. He makes the good ones.
Pre-smoked.
Doesn't he smoke them? Yeah.
Smokes the wings. Then he comes over and barbecues them at my place. But Kimmel showing up to your home to use your barbecue is like the 70s sitcom when the mother-in-law would show up and the woman, and she'd do like she'd wipe her finger along the windowsill and go, oh, it must be very dusty in here. And she was like judging all the time. I was thinking about all those crazy outdated things. I was talking earlier today about the Old Spice commercials. And by the way, I wish I was born too late, because I see these commercials. I grew up watching commercials where a couple went out to another couple's house to have dinner, and then at the end, after dessert, they asked, Harry, would you like a second cup of coffee? And then the wife jumped in. Harry never wants a second, and then he went, oh, yeah, by the way, I will. And the woman was shamed. Oh, she felt horrible. She went into a shame spiral, like, he only drinks one of my... You know, now, if you contrast that with my life and my relationship with my wife, it does not mirror that in any way, shape, or form. But
that was there was a caretaker quality to it. Or, yeah, like a, you know, basically like a butler is the role that was. Well, I know his coffee having habits. I can help you out with that. This is what he likes. Here's what he
not doesn't. Only that, but it was like, her husband didn't care for her coffee enough to have a second cup. But out with this new couple, she really liked her coffee. And then she did something Lynette would have never done, which is gone and asked the woman, well, wait a minute. There seems to be a brand of coffee that makes my husband happier than the one I have. Please tell me the name of that brand. Mine's a little more like family comes home from In-N-Out, and I go, oh, did you get me a burger? And they go, oh, did you want one? And I go, I didn't know you were going to In-N-Out. Oh, well. Okay. It's a little more of that, a little less. Adam's not having a second cup of my coffee. So I was thinking about the Old Spice commercials.
Yeah, those were great.
Underrated.
That was a man.
It had a whistle to it. And there's many different versions. There's the Old Spice guy coming home from sea, and he's tossing bottles to, like, young rookie guys. There's the one where the women patiently wait for their men to come home from sea. Mm. And I just thought, I don't know how that would work today. Like, there's women, like, literally standing on the guard railing of a White House, a lighthouse, I should say, just going, where is he? Where is my love? When is the tide going to bring my... But also, after like 5 weeks of being on the crab, do you come off the ship clean shaven and freshly scrubbed? I think you're at your worst hygienically when you get off that tuna boat, right?
I never thought about it that deeply, but you're right. That's why he needed the Old Spice, was to obscure the stench of of raw fish and everything, so he could make his proper love.
Also,
it's a victorious lovemaking upon returning from the sea.
It was a weird thing, because these commercials were from the 70s, but they were getting off these tall sailing ships, like Old Ironside and stuff. Like, what is he doing on the ship from 1821.
His life's work is crabbing, bringing home $41K annually for
but those. He's on slave ships. He's not on crabbing ships. Like, I don't get it. All right, can we see the commercial, Gary? Gary found the commercial.
Well, it also indicates that he's the ultimate man.
For centuries, women have impatiently waited for the men they love to turn to the sea. At Christmas time, there's no better way to express that love than a gift of Old Spice.
Good job, would probably be appreciated. Fresh,
clean.
They're running. By the way, the guy was in a dinghy. How long was he gone?
A wonderful way to please a woman. This Christmas, give Old Spice to someone you love.
That she, may as
she
well
comes
been
running toward him.
That feels 100 years ago. That was within our lifetime.
That's like probably 1976 or something.
More recent, 1980 is when that commercial came from.
In the 80s.
By the way, you mentioned this, and this has stuck in my craw for quite some time. I don't know if we've mentioned this before. You know, my love of uniforms and mascots and logos and how much I like to kibitz about those. You know, the paradox of the Oakland Raider guy, you know, he's got the eye patch. We know he's a ne'er-do-well. We know he's no stranger to battle, you know, give the aforementioned eye patch. He lost an eyeball out there. He's out there pillaging, ruining lives, but he always takes the time to shave before he leaves the house. Why is the Raider shaved? He's a pirate. What's he doing? I gotta look my best before I go out and take down this village and burn it down and all that kind of stuff. Weird.
I agree with that. I wonder why. So this chick's up in the lighthouse and she's just like surveying, waiting for a man to come home from sea. She then moves back to the cottage. He pulls up in the dinghy, or is that a new chick?
I think that's the same chick. I think she goes inside the lighthouse to the living quarters.
Oh, they live in a lighthouse?
It sure seems like
it. Boy, that is a commitment to the sea.
It's also a weird aspiration for America. Listen, if I play my cards just right, maybe I can have a dinghy and live in a lighthouse. That seems like a weird thing to shoot for.
I was telling Eric Stromer when I was doing Ace on the House the other day. I said to him, you know, we talk a lot about rambling songs, you know, and we think of the rambling songs as songs that either have the word rambling in them or just 70s kind of Leonard Skinner songs and stuff like that, right? And they tell you all the cities, you know, when we're back in Tulsa again, I'll love you down and all that stuff. There's an aquatic version of a rambling song, which is arguably the ultimate rambling song. Like, you have American Band, we're coming to your house, we'll rock you, buddy. We're coming to your town. And they're coming to your town, they're going to rock you, they're going to party down, then they're going to ramble some more, then they're going to put back, the tour will take them back through town. Mm-hmm. The ultimate rambling song is the aquatic song, which is Brandy. Because this dude isn't in a band and he doesn't ramble. He says to this woman, hey, listen, you're a fine girl, but my life, my love, and my lady is the fucking ocean. Like, I'm going out to the ocean over you. I'd rather just float around in salt water than hang out with you. Like, he's explaining that his life is a sea.
I remember when Andy Gibb, when he died, I forget who his lady love was. She was a famous person. She is a famous person with red hair, but I can't place which one she is. There we go.
Her name was Priscilla.
Yeah. I can't think of who she was, but she was in Dallas.
Yes.
That's what she was.
Not the state or
she
not the
Patrick
city.
She was Patrick Duffy's wife in Dallas, right.
Pam.
Not Dauber, because she was Morgan Mindy.
Pam was like two P's or something. It's like Pam something, and she was hot.
Yes.
That's right.
I can't think of what. Anyway, when I remember her being interviewed and saying, I told Andy it's either me or drugs, and Andy unfortunately chose drugs. I say choosing the C, maybe even a bigger slap in the face.
Yeah, I told some woman, like, hey, I really love you, but I got to go out in the ocean.
I like boats and stuff, too, so sorry, babe.
Now, look, maybe we can compromise and you can blow me on the pier. But I'm not getting far away from this ocean. That's what you're thinking.
Choosing the sea.
over. Choose the sea over Brandy.
Self-esteem issues forever for this poor woman.
I know.
Brandy. All right, let me tell you about Under Armour, and just in time for one Dave Damashek, because I need some heavy-duty training to get rid of this awful pot belly, and we're not even to Thanksgiving and Christmas yet. Perhaps I can get in the way of it with the help of Under Armour. Whether you're competing, training, or recovering, Under Armour has created the best performing gear to make you slash me better. With two exciting new collections, Vanish and Perpetual, Under Armour's ready to help you focus on performance and take your fitness game to the next level. And the next level for me would be the first level, because I haven't worked out in a year. They also have the best fitness apps to help you put that gear to the test. With Map My Run, you can track your runs, log your workouts, and even tap into coaching. I need that. I like those when they track your runs. With My Fitness Pal, you can track your diet. And if you sign up for premium, you can unlock even more tools to help you achieve your fitness goals. Download Under Armour's Map My Run and My Fitness Pal in the Apple App Store or Google Play Store and take control of your goals today. I need to do that, and I need you to listen to me and Adam Carolla next week on Good Sports. But for now, enjoy your football and baseball and hockey and college football. And I don't think basketball is tipping off yet, but that's just a matter of days away with LeBron. It's the sweet spot of the sports year. Make sure you're listening to us here on Good Sports each and every day on The Adam Carolla Show. Until next week, for Adam Carolla, Dave Damashek, Good Sports out. Good Sports.